Connected to CNN Network. You're connected to CNN Network. Currently connected to CNN Network.
At 8 PBF.
Connected to CNN Network.
K8RUH. Yo. What's going on? I was wondering for a few minutes if FBI was disconnected again. I hadn't heard anybody.
I called out just before 6:30. I didn't realize I was that early.
I was in the car. Maybe I didn't have the volume up, or maybe I hadn't turned the radio on yet, so who knows.
Yes, sir. Played a little hooky yesterday. Didn't feel so fantastic, so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to stay home.
Good for you. Yeah, I think it's allergies, but I've been congested and drainage and all that stuff. It's all the telltale signs of allergies, but it's just frustrating after the 5-week cold I had this winter, just like you did.
No kidding, man. I never want to do that again. That was like the most terrible quality of life, just being uncomfortably sick, but not really that sick, for about 2 months.
Yep, it was the worst, that's for sure.
So I got my Stick 500, my banana, and I know you're the guy that loves bags. What do you have yours in? I didn't realize it didn't come with anything.
Honestly, at this point, I haven't used it a ton, and when I have used it, I've used it at the house. It lives in the box. I haven't come up with a good solution yet. There are some, I don't want to call them hard cases, but like the rigid nylon cases, like the form-fitting ones that are on Amazon that I've seen that are, I don't know, $10 or something, but I don't have like a cool high-speed bag for it yet.
I don't know why that didn't just transmit.
I heard you that time.
I think UMP might be disconnected.
Okay, that would make sense. I haven't heard the Central Michigan call out yet. And when I was just switched over, A side was UMP, B side was FBI, and I didn't hear it on both channels. So, yeah, maybe we are just from FBI or from Central Michigan.
Anyways, what I was saying was Gigaparts had one when I ordered it, like the little Gigaparts branded cheap sleeve, like you were saying. But of course, they were out of stock, so mine's in the box. It's annoying. I don't use it that much. I just got it, but it would be nice that I could have a nice little zipper bag and throw it in my other bag and be done with it.
Totally, yeah. I mean, ultimately, that's what will have to happen, but I haven't even started looking for a solution yet, so let me know if you find something.
I will send you my recommendation, and I got the DigiRig working, kind of, sort of. I had Quad build me a model based on my caliper measurements. I'm not super happy with it. It's got a zip tie over it to like keep the pressure on it, but it cost me $0.
That works. $0 is the best amount.
How do I sound over here? Because I don't really have many options where I'm at.
Well, if you just switched over, it got, there's a little static in there. Your original transmissions were pretty good. I don't know if it's because you're traveling, you just moved locations or what.
I switched to Warren, and I'm at 26 and Plank, because Romeo and Richmond, the receive is terrible. It's so weird. Like, I transmit okay, but, like, the receive is super bad. I feel like it should be the other way around.
Yeah, that is interesting. I would think the same way, but every time I think I have something figured out in this hobby, it just goes in the wind, and the opposite is true.
Yes, sir. Are you going to the meeting on Thursday?
Yep, I am. I'm doing the orientation, too, so we'll have to figure it out. I may not go home at all. I may just, at, you know, 3:30, 4 o'clock, just head that way and grab some dinner or something.
That was my plan. I invited Sean, too, because I think he's going to the meeting. But, see, I don't know if he's going to hang out that long, because I forgot we have orientation. But, yeah, that's my plan. Just go post up somewhere and have some dinner and a couple beers, and maybe we'll go to Bubba's.
Yeah, the place is, like, right across the street from there, isn't it?
And their beer is cold.
Well, in that case...
It's going to be a long day, man. I just realized that I'm going to be leaving my house at 6:30, and then doing orientation at 6, and then going to a meeting from 7 to 9.
Yeah, I would imagine, you know, sometimes you can get out of there a little bit earlier. The key to it will be to not stand around and talk afterwards like we will all be drawn to do. Because if you're not careful, you can end up talking to people for another hour. So it's just something to be aware of. Make sure that you're defensive of your time. That's what I'll say.
That in mind, because I'm not one that hangs out late on a weeknight. Usually by that time I'm back showered and ready for bed.
Oh yeah, me too. Man, if I could be in bed at 9:30 every night, I'd be a happy dude. I'm usually in bed by 10 o'clock though.
Are there topics? Yeah, there's an agenda for the meeting, right?
Yeah. I don't know what their topic is this time, but, like, I was there. I've been to 2, maybe 3 meetings, and, like, one they had, Jeff, SWR, do a presentation on the DMR network. Another one, they made... Yagi antennas, just, you know, interesting, fun, silly things, you know, that somebody had 3D printed a bunch of connectors, and then they had tape measures pre-cut. It was pretty cool. So I think they try to do stuff like that as often as they can so that everybody is being brought up to speed and can make stuff on their own, but I don't know what they're doing this time.
I guess we will find out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think on that email there was you, me, and then a woman named Lisa, and I saw they sent out a new roster, and there's another person after me, so... I mean, they're picking people up pretty good. That's 4 people since, the middle of last month. So, we'll see. It'll be interesting. And so, they may do a little bit more of newbie stuff in the meeting if they got four new people there. I don't know.
Yeah, my buddy Phil applied too, JTMR, so I don't know if that was the fourth or if he'll be the fifth. He said he hasn't heard back yet, though, but, you know, he's like me. He dives headfirst into crap, so he's been building antennas and all that since he got his licenses, but he's interested in joining. He's actually a fireman, so he's already got all the FEMA stuff down.
He was not the fifth or, fourth or fifth one, whatever I said. It was a guy in Warren, I think. Maybe Pete? I can't remember when I looked at it. But, yeah, that's cool. Where is he, a firefighter?
He's out in Romeo.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, and he's by you. Is he in Macomb County or is he in Lapeer County?
He's like, I don't know, maybe a mile from me, north. He's in Lapeer County, and I actually met him on Meshtastic, funny enough, like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, whenever we all started jumping into that. And I just set up my node, and I sent out a test message, and he replied. I'm like, how the hell is there someone out here? And then, you know, I kind of stopped screwing around with Meshtastic, and he was on GMRS, and I don't think I ever talked to him over there. And then, how did I talk to him on the amateur side? I don't know if he called out or he messaged me on Meshtastic. Oh, he replied to me on Facebook, I think, when I was selling all my Meshtastic gear. And then I found out he was a ham, and then he kind of spiraled from there, and now he's doing all the things.
You're connected to CMN Network.
There we go. We're connected. Hey, I'm going to run into a store real quick. I'll be back out if you're still around. I'll chat with you on the rest of my way in. KE8RUH.
All right, I'll be here for a little bit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
A little behind schedule this morning, but still fine. So last night I was out in your neck of the woods. Had to go, had an old guy call me and tell me he wanted to give me a bunch of stuff. Otherwise it's going to the landfill. Amateur radio stuff.
You should have told me. I would have went and grabbed it for you. Is it anything I want to buy?
And that's where this story's going. No. I was looking through this, and I'm like, yeah, nobody's going to want any of this old radio teletype stuff from, like, the 60s. But, kept talking about, yeah, boxes and boxes of this old teletype paper. And, does it burn? Somebody up here with a wood burner might want it.
Well, that's a bummer. Sometimes you think you're going to hit the jackpot and you get someone else's garbage.
I was trying to find anything, you know, because I felt bad, you know, it's like, you know, lifetime of in the hobby and not a single thing there that anybody would. He had two old Motorola repeater cabinets, and they were kind of the standard in the like 50s and the 60s, and they're really Art Deco. They got a speaker in the front of them, and one of them was in pretty nice condition with meters and everything. I you know, I wouldn't mind. I'd gut it and just use it for something else. A lot of guys use them as gun safes, although they're at best a gun cabinet. It's not a safe and by any stretch of the imagination, but they're also, then, you know, they got 19-inch rack rails in them, so you could rack up stuff in them, but they're real cool looking. And then he had this transmitter called a BC-610. It's a military AM transmitter from World War II, and those are kind of cool. But again, it's huge, weighs, you know, 1,000 pounds. It's on casters, you know, and I'm sure it's going to have to be completely gone through. I'd be shocked if there wasn't mice colonies in it. So, you know, even if you were all into that and you wanted it and you wanted to restore it, it'd probably be a nightmare. But those are about the only things. That Motorola cabinet and that 610 transmitter, otherwise just nothing. Some old Motorola stuff and old GE stuff from like the 50s and 60s.
So it's like, it's a very, this hobby's already niche. The stuff he's got is niche for the niche.
Yeah, it was niche then, you know, and now it's like in scrap metal, most of it, you know, it's big, heavy iron. I mean, you know, there's a certain quirky kind of cool to it, but, you know, the electricity you'd need to run it, the space, you know, and the payoff would be what, you know, a little telepipe tape come out, you know. It's like FT8 from the 60s, you know, the 50s and the 60s, you know, and except for you needed the, you know, you needed a lot of gear to do it.
Where was this guy at? And FYI, Mount Clemens is offline, I believe. I can't queue it up.
Yeah, I didn't talk to you yesterday. Everything was down. I don't know if you were aware or not, but the whole network was down. The hub is in Fenton, and there was some sort of a major failure in Fenton. And so we were, Dad couldn't get in to look at anything. Nothing was talking to nothing. So I was, that was yesterday. But I don't know. It was working yesterday on my way home, so I'll have to take a look at it when I get in. I'm just Quinter here, 15 miles, so I'm a ways out of its range yet. Richmond. He was northeast of Richmond.
Oh, you're not kidding. You are out there then. That's even kind of far from me. But, yeah, I just thought I'd bring that up, and I played a little bit of hooky yesterday. But because of that, I'm early today, so I'm going to get going and get inside. Anthony, I'll catch you later. Sean, you as well. Anthony, pick it up. NADDF.
Have a good one, Dakota. Yeah, Sean, I just heard you talk about how the whole thing kind of fell apart yesterday. And it's interesting because you were talking about building that node to maybe change some of that stuff. So I wonder if that project has been expedited now. Over to you.
Yeah, it's funny because that was yesterday's plan, was to get that box pretty much up and running. And it was just odd that was the day that, you know, the very thing I'm trying to, you know, mitigate is occurred. Yeah, I mean, it's a rare occurrence. You know, there was a there's failover at the data center, and but the failover had a meltdown. So, you know, you got the failover equipment's being replaced, and you know, the main one was repaired, fixed, or whatever the problem. So, kind of a fluke, but still, you know, it just kind of puts the emphasis, or, you know, puts the exclamation point on why I want to get the hub localized.
Absolutely. It's the failures when it's easy, like this, that you learn all your lessons so that it doesn't fail when it's difficult, right?
Yep. You know, I still don't know exactly what happened, but you know, I'm just trying to think of how my setup, you know, if I had it localized here, how it would have, would it have in fact worked around all that? There have been some issues still, but now anything that has to come in over internet would have been affected, right? You know, so private nodes. Now, we normally have our own internet by us, you know, and so Freddie's got internet out here, out there at his location, very robust, you know, but we have our own as well, so, you know, we can route through either way, and but ours is down right now because of the building they're building in my microwave path. Dakota?
I think Dakota went into the office. That'll be interesting once you guys get it all figured out and what happened and how you're going to come up with a solution so that hopefully it doesn't happen again. But I am pulling up at the office here. I will maybe catch up with you afternoon drive. This is KEA-RUH. I'll listen out.
Okay. Seems like everybody's running a little behind. Well, Dakota was on time, but I'm a little behind myself. All right, catch you later. W8FU.
KEAWOJ.
Morning, Rick. How you doing? Just heading into work here. A little bit behind schedule. How you doing? Wonder if we're having a volume event.
Good morning, Sean, W8RCY. I've heard everybody's conversations, even Rick chiming in, and don't know, but the last hour or so, everything's been working fine from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I just think he's got his volume down. He'll figure it out. Anyhow, good morning.
Well, it's good in the sense that my eyes have stopped bothering me. Maybe with this weather getting better, my eyes will get better. And it's definitely not a good morning if you're a Pistons follower. That's for sure. I stayed up late and watched the game. Big mistake. Doggone officials 2 times in a row. But that's about all I'm going to say about officials.
Oh, fill me in. What happened? I take it they lost. There was some bad calls.
Well, to make it short, it was pretty much 2-1, almost 3-1 margin in fouls called, and within the dying seconds of regulation, like 3.4 seconds left or something like that, we inbounded the ball, and one of our players was obviously tripped. I mean, there was 22,000 referees in there that called it, but the three officials on the floor did not call it a trip, and it would have put us at the free throw line, and we went into regulation, we ended up tying and went into regulation, and we ended up losing, I think, by 9 points or something like that, and yeah, it was just some bad calls, but it's what happened in game three as well. You can obviously see the favoritism, but players and the coaches, they really can't say much for fear of being, you know, penalized or something, and that carrying over to the next game. Oh, you're going to talk bad about us now? Okay, we'll get you in the next game, kind of a thing. So, yeah, but we got screwed.
Well, I don't watch basketball at all, so I'm not really following what's going on, but is it a best-of-five series? And this was, I think this was the clincher. I don't even know. Or is it a best-of-seven? There's still more to go. I don't have any clue.
It is a best-of-seven series. I am not a pro basketball fan. I'm more of a college basketball fan and a college football fan. Sure, the Pistons are doing good. Sure, the Lions are doing good, so that's why I'm watching them. But, yeah, it is a best of seven. Cleveland is up 3-2. Game six is in Cleveland tomorrow night, and I believe game seven, if we do win, will be Sunday in Detroit.
Well, there you go. You're still alive. So, Cleveland managed to come in here and snatch one, so they got to go over to Cleveland and snatch one. So, oh well, is what it is.
Yeah, that's about the best way to put it. You know, it is what it is, and you know, no use crying, whether they say over spilled milk or something like that. You just got to go in there and, you know, continue to fight and claw. We did win three in a row against Orlando when we were down. But, yeah, this is going to be a little bit tougher. So we'll see what happens. Other than that, that's about it. You got a busy day today? You going to be on the road or do you get to hang out at the office all day?
Rick, do you find your volume control yet? Maybe not. I got some stuff I could do, but I don't have plans necessarily. We'll see. Depends on what's going on. Usually if it's one of those days where I don't have everybody out at sea, then, you know, I'll go knock out some of the visits that I got to do. But if everybody's, you know, out to sea and I got to hold down the fort, I like somebody to be there if somebody comes walking in, even if I can't work on this stuff.
Yeah, my place is still in topsy-turvy land in the living room, but now they're doing an inspection of the building. Apparently there is a cockroach problem. And we had one in near my unit about two or three summers ago. It came in and sprayed my apartment and put traps down and everything like that, and then they come back a few days later. They didn't find any in mine, but something somewhere. And so I have my kitchen pulled apart now, and I got my living room in disarray. So I'm pretty much living in the bedroom right now, and that's about it. But they'll be here today. And I have not seen any cockroaches in 3 years since the incident down the hall. But these things happen, and because people don't clean and, you know, take care of their places like, you know, you're supposed to. And I don't know, some of these seniors, they just don't have anybody that does it. Me, there's just me, myself, and I here, and I, you know, dust twice a week, vacuum twice a week, do my floors, you know, every other weekend, and that's about it. But I mean, yeah, so I got a fun day today. Plus I've got, whatchamacallit, physical therapy, amongst all that.
Well, that don't sound fun. Got to keep everything Ziploc bags or something. Don't let cucaracha get to you. So if they're in the area, they could easily spread. So, yuck. So, what do you got physical therapy for? I don't think I ever asked you. Is it your back? I forget. I'm not 100% sure I know what you go in for.
It is to maintain mobility in my lower back. There is strength exercising I do, but it's where your spinal cord attaches to your pelvis is where the injury happened decades ago. And I never had it treated right or anything, and I just abused it over the years to the point where it is so deteriorated. I'm doing everything I can short of being cut open, and I will not let them cut me open. I'd rather just deal with it. But as age progresses and close to 50 years of time have gone by, it's just, you know, it's just a matter of maintaining what is the inevitable. And like I say, I'm fortunate not to have a cane, a walker, a wheelchair, or anything like that. And there's also some balance issues that they're watching out for. The hips themselves are fine, but it's just that connection between your spinal cord and your pelvis that's jacked up. And I go through a series of maneuvers to maintain stability and strength.
I believe that's the L4S1 joint. Is that where you're having your problems?
Yeah, it's the structural part of it. But then again, there's also issues with sciatica, your neuromuscular things, pinched nerves, everything like that. The blow that my lower back took, I jerked backwards over a concrete curbstone, if you remember the days of curbstones and parking lots. They were driven into the ground with a couple of spikes, and I tripped over backwards with one while carrying a piece of furniture, and I landed right on that. And it was significant, what they called initially a bruise, but no, I guess there was some more internal damage. And it just was not treated right on both sides. I'm just as much to blame. I mean, I played sports. I played hockey, as you know, and sometimes I even played through pain. But, yeah, so I'm paying for it now. And like I said, you know, I went in for my physical back in when I was 56, and they told me, you're done. Keep doing what you're doing at the pace you're doing. You're going to be crippled a lot quicker. So for the last 12 years, it's just been maintenance. And if you can say, knock on wood, I'm still walking, thankfully.
Well, I just, my problem is L4S1, and that's, I understand that's exactly where the spot you talked about. It's where the L4 is the last of the lumbar, is it? And the S1 is the top of the pelvis. And, you know, it's just funny because you goaltended, and I didn't, not to the degree you did, but, you know, I did too, and both have trouble in that area. But you say yours is due to a specific injury. I think I can trace mine to a specific moment, to a specific injury. As well, but let's put it this way. I remember the exact moment it said hello, and I've been dealing with it ever since. But I was extended. I was just extended out over the, this is like in the mid-90s, and I was bent over, extended into the back of a trunk. And there is the trunk units, the radio units, and those days were ginormous, and they were in a trunnion. You know, they had to be kind of like, you had to give them a good tug to get them free. And so I was trying to get the trunk unit out of the old Centaur X, I think it was. I was trying to get the trunk unit. It was a bathtub Chevy, one of those old Chevy Impalas, and I was standing on the outside, bent all the way over to get up to the package shelf in the trunk, and I was reefing on that trunk unit, trying to get it dislodged from the tray, and all of a sudden, pop! You know, one of the times I tugged on it, and I felt this pop, and I went to the ground, saw stars, and it's like, oh boy, went away real quick, but it returns and says hi every now and again, and it's getting more frequent as I get older.
Connected to CMN Network.
Thank you, young lady, for the reminder. Yeah, I remember those trunk units. I was starting to hang around with the Shores Cop in the mid-70s. But for me, even in my years of working in the meat department at Farmer Jack's and other places, we were still using swinging cattle. And the floors in there are those porous liquid floors that just harden, they self-level and all this and that. And you have to wear steel-toed boots and so on and so forth in case you drop something on your foot. But to get traction in there is impossible. And you carry a 140-pound hind quarter on the, you get it off the cut, off the meat hook, because we had rail systems back then, just like in the old Rocky movies. And, you walk over to the table with it, and it's only maybe two or three steps to the table, and you hit that floor, and you're walking on it, but you hit a wet spot or something, and the next, you know, slip, pop, ouch, pain, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I had that happen a lot, and a lot of people in my industry back then have been crippled from it. My dad, my late brother-in-law, myself. I don't think there's a person that ever worked in a meat department with swinging cattle that does not have some form of back or lower back or hip or pelvis problem of some kind. It's just inevitable.
Makes sense. Yeah, I can imagine slipping on that floor, especially if you're, come on. They're playing on their phones with their heads up their rump. They don't realize they're jacking up four people behind them because they're not looking, just monkeying on their phone. Anyway, I'm in the line at Starbucks here, and I'm next up to order, so I'm going to drop out here, take care of that, and I'll jump back in here after I navigate the line.
Okay. I'll be standing by, but I'll just throw this little tidbit out while you're listening. Yeah, my father, he retired in 1980. Was it just before I got married in 80, I think. Just before I got married in 80, he had his hip replaced, and I think he was 60 or 61 when he had that done, and he was forced to retire early. He tried to come back, but if you were to slip and fall on a wet floor like that after having a hip replaced, you would have been done for sure. But, yeah, so I got out of it when I did, and I just didn't want to be. I mean, fortunately, I got out of it when I did, but the damage was already done. W8RCY will be standing by.
Ooh, they have horchata. I'm going to try it. I ordered Starbucks the other day, and I get a breakfast sandwich, and I didn't realize they have condiments for the breakfast sandwiches. And I ordered sriracha, or I don't know how you pronounce it, but anyways, it's a chili sauce type thing, and oh, was that ever good. So every time I order coffee, I get a breakfast sandwich, and I get the sriracha. Yesterday morning, I had my coffee, I had my sriracha, got done, cleaned up, put everything away, threw out the cups, everything like that. I washed my hands. I know I washed my hands. And my eyes started to itch. Well, somewhere in the cracks and crevices of my fingers, there was this little dab of sriracha in there, and boy, did that burn. And I'm going, oh, doggy, oh, man. And holy cow. So I got to remember. I mean, I generally take all the precautions, but, yeah, that sriracha in the eyes. It tastes good on a breakfast sandwich, but it doesn't do anything for your eyes, especially if you got allergies.
Yeah, I got the one where I've got jalapenos. They get the oil on your fingers. You can't hardly even see it, you know. And if you're, you know, you could even wipe your hands, you know, off. You know, like if you're, I get it, especially when I go to Thai and I get pho, because I cut up the, you know, the jalapenos by hand, and they don't give you a knife or anything. I guess you could ask for one, but if I have my pocket knife, I'll chop them up that way. If not, I'll just use my fingers to break them apart and throw them in the pho. And, you know, but you get that oil on your finger, and you don't even know it. And if you rub your eye, oh, boy. All right, I'm up. I got to chat with the barista. I'll be back. W8RCY.
W8RCY, standing by.
Yeah, out the window, kind of bends down and looks up at the top of my car. She goes, "What's up with the antennas?" I says, part of my job. She goes, "Okay." Apparently, that was enough.
Well, your company car is almost, you know, blue goose color of the state cars. So, yeah, you're just missing all the, well, I wouldn't say bells and whistles and lights, but, yeah, that's about it. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Anyhow, though, that's about it for me today. And, yeah, get all this stuff done and put my apartment back together on tomorrow night. And I don't even know what I'm doing for the rest of the weekend. But I did send you a link to the Craves that's opening up, and if you're not always in the area to drive by, you can check it that way. And I also have the one to the Lapeer, and which I've been to, and it's a Mediterranean menu, but really, really good. So don't know exactly when, but at least they posted a website now for the Warren location, and we can follow it and look at the menu and stuff like that when they open.
Yeah, one of the waitresses that worked at Ramshorn, she now works at the Country Bumpkin, or whatever they call it. And somebody used to call it the Country Bumpkin. What is that place? The place that we go to normally? They still call it the Country Bumpkin. I know that's not the name.
Yeah, it may not be the name, but it has that kind of a flair to it. So you could see if, like, the shoe fits kind of a thing for sure. And with all these other small restaurants up and down John R. and Quinder that I've found, and towards Ryan as well, Hoover, I know when I go see my eye doctor or my eye surgeon on Hoover there, there's a Country Oven type place, so all these little places. You can easily get them confused for sure.
Cozy Cabin, that's it. Anyhow, she works there now, so. And she was saying that she didn't think the menus were going to be the same, or was that you saying that? I don't remember. Anyhow, I am turning on to Rose, so I'll make this my last. If I get parked and get inside, because I've no time to dilly-dally. I'm running a little late this morning. After yours, W8FU.
Okay, well, I hope you're able to land the plane in your favorite hangar spot and it's not occupied, and get inside and get your day started and have a good day for sure. We'll be monitoring throughout the day like I usually do, and that'll be it from here, except for about the hour and a half that I'm going to be downstairs and like getting physical therapy stuff done. WARCY, we're out. We're listening. Have a good day.
You're connected to CMN Network.
KCHKJL on the NABF repeater.
Good morning, Cujo. W8DPD on this chilly morning.
Good morning, Brian. Hanging up at Petoskey. Take care of a camera there, then Cadillac, take care of some cameras and access there, and then hopefully get back into the area by the time the net starts.
No, you don't like pushing it too much. Yeah, I gotta go climb on the lawnmower this morning. I hate when it's cold like this.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan either. You know, hopefully the sun stays out by the time we get up there, because the camera is outside.
Well, it's supposed to be a partly sunny day up there, 61 degrees for a high in Traverse City. I looked that up this morning. I didn't know that my weather app had switched me over to Traverse City, because I was complaining about it, so my wife pointed out. I don't know what I'm doing.
Right. So what do you have to climb up today to take care of it? Are you going up a tower today?
No, I'll be in the cemetery cutting grass all day.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Well, at least it's a nice day. It's a little chilly, but not warm enough for me.
Yeah, well, last night on the golf course was brutal. I swear I thought I saw a snowflake, but with that wind whipping around and everything else like that, they said the wind chill factor was only 45. I called bull on that one, but yeah, you know, another month of summer, I mean winter before we get to summer. This is getting ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. I mean, geez, we're in the middle of May, and it's still, you know, 40 degrees at night, which means it's either going to be a mild summer or it's going to be a delayed summer where it's going to be 70, 80 degrees all the way till November. I don't know. The weather's been really weird over the past couple of years. KTK Joe.
Yeah, well, I'm beginning to wonder if global warming isn't something the government manufactured to sell us a bill of goods, but oh well, I don't know. All I know is I'm not having fun yet this year. The motorcycle hasn't been out for very far. I think it's only got like 2 miles on it so far this year. But it's not totally because it's so cold. It's just, it's cold when I have the time to ride it.
All those Starlink satellites are blocking the sun's rays from warming us up, so I'm blaming Elon Musk. WARCY, good morning.
It's all the Chinese drones. Let's see. I'm just kind of listening.
All the Chinese drones, the weather balloons, polar ice caps melting, Kilauea's erupting again, filling up the caldera at the volcano in Iceland that's going crazy, all warming up the atmosphere, but yet it's still 40 degrees outside.
Here all along, I thought it was the construction at Van Dyken's 32-mile KFA GFL.
All right, gentlemen, I just pulled in the driveway of work. Got to park this beast and get my butt on the lawnmower, my knees in the breeze. I will chat with you all later. WAPPD. I'll be clear on your guys' finals.
All right, have a good mow day there, Bri. 73 for now from KTKGO. Over to the next.
W8RCY, we're clear. Everybody have a great day.
Take care, gents. Have a good day. And, yeah, we'll hope for warmer weather because I'm plenty sick of it. Tired of buying wood pellets. Anyway, I'm going to go make another cup of coffee and eat ZC.
And I'm getting to the end of the string of Dakota's tower, so I'll be back out in a bit. Check when I get a little bit more into Flint. 72 to all, and be safe out there. KCK deal.
Currently connected to CMN Network.
Are you out of the basement again?
I am out of the basement and on the road. Only about 15 minutes past when I wanted to be on the road, but I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'm shooting to be on the road by 8, and it's quarter after, so I feel pretty good about that.
Get the
what? You're an IZ.
You got the interwebs all fixed?
I did temporary, well, not temporary. I wanted to put one down there, so I did that. And then, although one of, I ordered two things from Streakwave. One of them was in Ohio, one was in Utah. So I'm not sure which one. The one we, I'm going to have Michelle prep and take is going to, if it's coming from Utah or if it's coming from the other place, Ohio. If it's Ohio, it'll be here today. If it was the Utah one, it'll probably be here Monday or Tuesday, but I put one in the south room, so we're fine there.
What was the main failure yesterday? We know why the backup failed.
It was just a route that was hung, so I had to bounce it. Which I could have done quicker had my LTE was working. I would have just gone in there and done it. No one would have been any the wiser.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting that it just popped out like that.
That little spring, man, it's got some force behind it. I grabbed it with Gorilla Glue and it still popped its ass out of, I don't know, a month or two after I put it in. I'm sure it probably did it, you know, a little while ago, but you know, the router was technically up, so it showed by in the alarms.
Yeah, you get a little heat in that device, though, it'll start softening that glue, and yeah, a little springy little bugger, I guess.
It's right below a AC vent, so like it's got cold air blowing on it. It's big and open, so yeah. But it definitely, you know, the spring in there just it was a clean, like it wasn't. It was a clean push, and it broke it right. You know, I'm like, okay. It wasn't like one side; it just went boop the whole thing.
Might get pretty hot in there. I know my little switch, when I moved that thing, I pulled the SFP out, and that thing was just burning hot. Man, this is, it shouldn't be that warm, right?
Oh, SFP modules? Oh, no, they get really hot. Even, like, Ethernet ones, if you want to think about it, yeah, yeah. They get warm.
Yeah, that's what it was, a little Ethernet, the 1 gig or whatever. It's only one of those little 5-port switches, so you can't really do much with it, more than 1 gig.
No, exactly. The, I know the, in the earlier days, Microtech, on their first revisions of some of their SFP stuff, you know, had guidelines of how many modules you could have next to each other and switches and things.
Yeah, I can see that. I was looking at getting like a 2.5 gig SFP for it, but because then I could plug it into the 2.5 gig port on the router, but I don't know, looking at it, like, even if you plug something bigger in it, it's only going to run at 1 gig anyway.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about right now is the, like, my current router at home is, I've got 10 gig to the core switch, and then I've got a 2.5 gigabit copper interface towards the cable modem, and but when the fiber comes, I'm like, I know they're going to give you this like
T-Mobile, you know, fiber gateway or whatever, ONT, but I've other fiber to the home providers, you know, people have found how to, you know, get other, their own mod optics, you know, for, because it's probably going to be, you know, the ONT passive, not active optics, or active distribution, it'll be the ONT, and, load the security file and the config on it so you can, you know, get rid of your ISP's modem and run your own optics to your own SFP cage. So if I do that, or go that route, I gotta replace my router with a multi-SFP router, which I have one behind me because that's what I'm putting in Davis, or up here in Greenville. I ordered three or two of them. I want to see how they work, and if it's good enough, I'll get one for my house and when the fiber comes along. Because it's got four SFP plus routed interfaces on it on top of the, I think, 8 Ethernet, but I don't really need the Ethernet since it's going SFP to the, you know, to the switch. Then I can do SFP to the WAN and SFP to the, SFP plus, excuse me, from the WAN and to the LAN.
I'm going to try out that new switch that's got Swiss Army knife with the Wi-Fi and SFPs and POUT DOE. That looks like a nice bit of kit, but more than I need.
Yeah, I see that for branch offices and things, like small, where you just need one, you can have one device. And, you know, the dozen or so ports and Wi-Fi kind of thing. It doesn't have, I don't even think I have an office. I used to have one small enough that it would be perfect for. I guess I could put it in Ortonville, but I don't have as much Cat 5 RAM there yet. I don't know if we're going to, even though we added more people there. But, although it would work good at the in the garages for the two maintenance barns that I have for the golf courses. And I police reported ahead. Really? I don't see him yet. Is that because he's not there anymore?
Yeah, I thought about getting that thing, but just to be in play with it. I think what I really need is just one of those, like, 8-port switches, whatever, something that does real PoE so I can power the bat phone off of it, but not have to have the wall work, but that's not too critical. I've got what I need right now, but it is also, I'm also full right now, which I never thought I'd be after so many, so many places before I would have nothing plugged in Ethernet at all beyond Wi-Fi.
Yeah, hardwire all the things. I ended up putting a 10 gig switch in my office and moved my fiber. I had a 24 port with 10 gig uplinks, dual 10 gig uplinks in my office. And I'm like, I need more 10 gig. So I got a new 10 gig and put that, you know, to do the from the fiber from the closet and then, or fiber from the network closet to the office and then, you know, broke it off from there. So I was like, I didn't think I was going to need 10 gig quick enough, but I'm like, yep, I need 10 gig. It goes 10 gig to my Mac and 10 gig now to my desktop, plus server to the little, or to the switches. And I'm like, okay, I'm ready for my 2 gig fiber. Give me my 2 gig fiber now. Since I can saturate the gigabit, you know, coax.
Yeah, there you go. Get that going. Yeah. I've got all my pies and everything. I was running Wi-Fi and hardwired those, and the Synology only hooked into one, and figured out how they could do two. So got that in a two ports bridge now. So yeah, it's filled up fast.
Did you 8023 bond it?
Yeah, I bonded it in the router, so it's not. I guess you can do it on the Synology itself, but I did it in the router.
Well, so you do. I do it in both. So you use 802.3d or 803. You'll see it in Synology. It's like the first one of the options there. But it says you can't use it unless your switch supports it. So in the Microtech, you make a bonding interface. You go bonding, add your two ports into a bond, or I call it, I'm old, so I call them lags, and then you select 802.3d mode in the Microtech, and then you do the same thing on the Synology, and then it actively monitors the bond, or the lag. And then on the Microtech, you add just the bonded interface into your bridge for your switch config. So you take the two ports, two individual ports out, and then just make it the bond there.
Hey, man.
That's probably what I did. I did it a while ago, but I know, but I think, if I remember right, on the Synology, if your switch doesn't support it, there's like a way you can fake it. But, go ahead. I think that was Sean. He'd be able
to... Yeah, good morning. Now, just FYI, UMP Mount Clemens is down, so whenever you get a chance, Fred, you want to bump it.
Aw, the day your repeater needs a kick. Yeah. I need to make you an Omaha mug. Did I have to? One of these days I'll make you that.
Yeah, not a big deal. I just thought I'd mention it while I heard you. And Matt and TJ's offline. I don't know why. Ever since he's having trouble down there. He's talking about swapping it out for a Quan Power.
Okay, RF on TJ's was out. Okay. Well, and it was throwing the alarm tones for a while, so I wonder if it finally, you know, just said, screw you, buddy, I'm going home.
Yeah, I don't know if you're, I can get a better idea of what's going on. UMP is just dead dead. I mean, it's not standalone or nothing. It's just, it won't key up. So it's done that before. So we just got to give it a bump. I'm not sure about TJ's. I think his might be working standalone, but it's not connected. I don't know what's going on with this. I have to evaluate it a little bit closer. When I get some time, I'll try to figure it out.
I keep down there.
Hey, man. Macomb County's the queer electron capital of the world.
So it says I'm an hour and 40 minutes from the plant, so. It actually, Waze wants, and Waze and Google both wanted me to take 475 to 57 and cut across 57 instead of taking 69 across. So 69 to 127 was 15 minutes slower for me today, so I wonder if there was something going on 69.
Yeah, sounds like it. Looks like they're planting grass on 75, so hopefully that'll be done soon.
All right, I got a Linux question. I have a bootable stick with Debian 12 on it. Is it worth it to update that ISO to 13 before I install? Or could I just do the, or is there any advantage over just installing 12 and upgrading to 13?
I mean, at this point, I would just make it 13 and go, you know, I mean, you can do the goal to 13 upgrade, but at this point, just start fresh.
Especially if you modified anything, if it's just native 12, just, yeah, upgrade to 13, it'll be much faster.
Well, I'm not worried about speed, so faster doesn't bother me, but I'm just wondering if there's any reason, but I'm already seeing a bunch of warnings as it's upgrading here. I'm already in the process of upgrading. But I'm about ready to just start from scratch with a 13 ISO.
What I've been doing here for the last couple months is just starting to do 13.
What's annoying me is, like, sudo's not installed by default, you know, user add is not in there. I'm like, you know, why are all these utilities not here? It's like, ugh!
Did you not watch my little video I made? Come on.
You made a video?
Yeah, Walters. I made a video for Walt. Well, I care with everybody, but how to install Debian 13 on a Y5070 the Siemens way.
Get out. That's exactly what I'm doing right now. I got one of those 512 SSDs that you were upgrading them to. I found them. I couldn't find them. I'm like, and I don't want to buy one now because they went up about five times price. I think I paid $20 for a 512 when I bought them. And I look now, they're like $100. I'm like, yeah. So I found it. So I've got my Weiss box getting, I'm finally going to go forward with getting the, and after yesterday, it's so funny. I started this yesterday when everything broke down. It's exactly why I want to bring the hub home.
Yeah, because inner IC was working, but yeah. And I'm looking at 512 mini of mine. I got 128s and 236s because I'm poor. But I went and bought a stack of 128s. And I had, because I was, last stack I bought was a couple months ago, and, you know, 15 or whatever I think it said. And yeah, $18 a stick or whatever it was. And then $45, I think, or $48 I just got done paying for the same stick. I'm like, oh, that's unbelievable. For 128. Yeah, it's like, what the hell?
I've had it in Omen Wind, Amy Wind.
Yeah, I wish I would have bought, you know, half a dozen when they were, I think the 256 when I bought them was $17. Wish I would have bought, you know, four or five of them upgrade, but I only bought two. I bought a 256. I think I got that on the 2.6 machine. And then I bought a 512, which was just a for one that I was just using as a little experimental Weiss box. That's the one that's going to be the new hub. Hey, I'm going to send you a picture I drew. It's all got colors and everything of my thoughts about kind of like a couple things I'm going to do here. One, I want to give a bunch of my five-digit numbers back to the pool. I just don't need them, right? And it's piggy of me. I'm gonna try to tidy things up, change some numbers, fix some things. And I got kind of a map of how I want to do things. I'm gonna send you a text message with it. When you get some time to look at it, I wouldn't mind bending your ear a little bit about what my thoughts are and why I might do something, and you could say, yeah, don't do this or do that, or I would do this. Kind of a just it's more of topography of my All-Star network.
Well, I wouldn't give any of my ASL notes. Oh, wait a minute. They took all my ASL notes. So I wouldn't be nice to give any of them back, but yeah.
No, I get it, and I thought about that, but I've got 10 five-digit ASL numbers, and I really don't need it. I could get away with two, you know, because I'm never going to have anything of the likes of, you know, what you got. I've got my little FBI network, which, you know, I could split one of mine and handle everything there, and then I got another one I can split for all my personal needs. And, you know, I'd go from currently I have 10 five digits to I'd have 26 digits. And for me, that's fine. But if I were in your shoes, it'd be different, right? You know, but I'm never going to be getting bigger than I am now. I'm as big as I'm ever going to get, unless we're talking about my weight.
Come on now, Sean. You're not thinking we need to put flying deer just right up there where we put semen. We want flying deer to penetrate Michigan like no other. And, you know, because it's you, we wouldn't even allow you to start spreading your FBI seed into Ohio, and we would still talk to you.
I only like one thing out of Ohio. Well, my family, them aside. I love the way this thing says Mount Holy Remote. Mount Holy.
I'm trying to get her to say Holly, right? But yeah, it just says Mount Holy. All I say that is semen now has, we are penetrating RF in Ohio right now for the invention. So we're transmitting our DMR seed all over Canadian.
I'll tell you what, I am really, really looking forward to information on that new ICOM HF rig. They're calling it the XO26. If that's what I think it is, take my money.
The amount of ham radio YouTube slop around that keyword right now is sickening. It's just sickening. Like screenshots and 5 minutes of rambling AI text for all these YouTubers. They're ham radio YouTubers. I'm like, really, dude? Crikey.
Connected to CMN Network.
All right, I sent you my little picture. So, whenever.
I'm going to say because I'm driving. I'm getting off here at 57 and 75. No, thank you. There we go. Making the left. Cause, like, I had wondered if I had enough time at the light to log into Almon, but I'm like, no, light just turned green. We're all going left.
Oh, speaking of control, your Mount Clemens machine. I dropped the band hammer on it the other day. It just occurred to me. It's been off for 2 days now. So if you get any complaints on your Mount Clemens GMRS machine, it's offline because I got angry, and I'm still angry.
Somebody make you upset. Did they say no, no, no? We don't like you.
No, just typical Mount Clemens stuff. Just was tired of hearing it, so I shut it off. Because when I don't like what I'm hearing, I just turn it off. That's what the volume control's for.
All that and their remote power switch. Come on now, we got more than just volume control.
I was just letting you know because, you know, it's funny. Everybody thinks it's my machine. It's like, you know, why don't I this, why don't I that? Because I don't ever say anything because it's not my machine.
I'm going to have to switch zones here and flip over to Paul's machine here in a minute. That's one caveat of taking 57 across is I'll be able to use the first repeater. The first machine repeater on MI1 here.
Now you need an Ernie. You can have the Burt and Ernie machines. All right, anyhow, I got to get to a little work. I know you've been busy as hell with whatever melted down yesterday. I'm finally going to get, I want to get all, I know you're not a big fan of AllScan, but it's so simple. And I don't want to babysit these things. I want to get some control operators that can easily connect and disconnect things and shut things down if necessary, you know, with some guidelines in that. And so I'm looking forward to getting the All-Star 3 node up and running and get it local, like we talked about. I want to get local over at Warren, too. And, you know, and then that way, you know, I've insulated myself from at least a little failure. And so I'm working on it right now. You've been busy, but like I said, I wouldn't mind maybe picking your brain a little bit about what my thoughts are here as I start to, you know, actually lay down the All-Star stuff. But I got to get to work here. Time is a waste. And after yours, W8FU.
All right. Well, I just told Dad to reboot to restart Patrick, so you can hear Dad right now.
All right. I got it dialed up here, so I'll give it a minute and give it a try, see if it's talking.
Yeah, I just told it to do a service restart instead of a full restart, so... if the service restart did it, or if I hit the button to do a full box reboot. And I just did a full box reboot on TJ too, so. Although it said it was connected and showed traffic while you were talking, but if it's control, he's got that other controller in line, so if it, you know, drops, kind of deal.
UMP is still dead as a doornail. It's, not even for chunking. Let me try PJ's.
Okay, I just pulled the mount from the box to completely remove.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
Testing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, might be PJ's transmitter. Hmm. Anybody closer to Detroit that can see if they hear the 175?
Coming 175 is not responding. Kilo Fox Trot 8 Echo Tango Quebec.
All right, thanks, Darren. Yeah, Fred, it sounds like TJ's got a transmitter problem, so maybe the beep beeps have gone nuclear. He's on the network, and he seems to be hearing us. Or, you know, the network traffic is getting to him, but it doesn't seem to be transmitting. So TJ got problems.
All right, this is my phone coming. I'm on and clear. Hold on. Freddie, you sound good. John, you sound good as always. And I'm clear at 46.75. Take it, Chuck.
All right, let's try this again. Okay, this is the Mount Clemens. It seems to be working now. Test 1, 2, 3.
Okay, yeah, just PJ. Sounds like the first one.
All righty. Sounds like we're almost whole.
Hold Fred in because you're dropping the package.
Echo Tango.
You're connected to CMN Network. Connected to CMN Network. You're connected to CMN Network. Currently connected to CMN Network. Connected to CMN Network. You're connected to CMN Network. Connected to CMN Network.
Kilo Foxtrot 8 Echo Tango.
You're connected to CMN Network. Currently connected to CMN Network. Connected to CMN Network.
W8FU.
You're connected to CMN Network. How you doing this afternoon?
Doing okay.
Nice weather, huh?
It is fantastic. I have the windows down and enjoying it. I'm going to be on the expressway momentarily, so I'll have to roll them up, but it is great.
Man, I remember when I was a kid and we didn't have power windows. We actually avoided them because they were, you know, they would get unreliable, the switches would go bad, so, ah, the heck with that newfangled technology, I'll stick with the crank-ups. But, man, we'd run around with them down all the time, you know, even on the freeway, and it didn't seem like it was that big a deal, but my friend John told me once the reason for that is, you know, if you had a coupe, the doors were really long, and they were, you know, in the opening of the windows way back behind you. Yeah, the pillar wasn't right there next to your ear, so that's probably why it was more tolerable, because I had coupes with really long doors.
That makes a lot of sense. I will run them down on the expressway, except when I'm on the radio. It just makes it too difficult to hear.
We had that. Our radios were crap back then. He had a pair of 5 1/4 inch coaxials that were probably surface mounted, and an IDI shotgun, 20-watt amplifier, maybe some Jensen coaxials or triaxials if you were really living large, and a back deck and a 6x9 cutout. Yep, man, that was. Premium hi-fi car stereo.
Yeah, I can remember even when I first started driving, man, we would just overhaul the whole car stereo system, put all new speakers in, run new radios, and it was easy. I can't even imagine what it would take to do something like that in these cars now.
Well, you don't want to monkey with the head unit anymore, right? Because they're just all integrated with controls and what is this jack wagon doing? Oh, on the phone, of course. Anyhow, you know, the head units are all integrated with the steering controls and diagnostics and menus for the car and everything. So you got to kind of leave that. And what I did in my Ford is I had to convert it, the speaker level to line level, and then I ran it into an amp, and then I ran my own speakers, you know, within a subwoofer out. So that's kind of what you got to do. I mean, I guess you could replace the head unit in some vehicles, but boy, it's getting few and far between.
Yeah, man, I can't even imagine. They killed the whole industry by some of the advancements that they've made.
Yep, just give me a nice big display with screen mirroring. And I'm in heaven. That's all I need. Although I'll tell you, the car apps have been getting better, where they let you segment it, like, you know, this 2/3 of it's for the map, and then off to the side they got like a couple of other apps stacked, like a messaging app and your music or something. So they're getting much better at making the big screen in car experience driver friendly. Just like we were talking about the other... Ah, for God's sakes. Traffic shut down here. So, yep, got a nice guy going to let me in. Well, I'll be gosh darned. Yeah, like we were talking the other day, it should be sure nice if you get AI to... Or that might have been Dave I was talking to find the next whatever you're looking for on my route.
Yeah, I would imagine, excuse me, that is not far off.
I mean, I wonder if it could do it. If you had, you know, a route punched into your Google Maps or whatever, and you asked, you know, find the next Starbucks on my route. I wonder if it would do that. I don't know. I'd have to have knowledge of the route and the app and all that stuff, but...
Yeah, you would just need it to have interaction with your GPS app, I guess, and then it would work just fine. It just depends on who integrates that first, I would imagine.
Well, I'm sure it's coming soon to a car near you. On another note, cracked out one of my Weiss boxes, upgraded the SSD in it, and replaced the battery in it, and got it all fired up with the new ASL3 for the new FBI hub. I got it online right now so I can get to it and I can start figuring out how I want to do things. I'm going to start making the private nodes and getting those all doing what they're supposed to do. So, coming along pretty nice. I do like those Weiss boxes. That was a good catch.
Yeah, I would love to find something else that is that useful to everyone. Again, just gotta find the right thing.
You know, we have this perfect application for them. You know, so and there was thousands of those things. You know, all over the place. So there's just the surplus on them. They're surplus up the wazoo. They're more than ample, powerful enough for an all-star node. And, you know, and we have a perfect app for them. So just it was a perfect storm. And, you know, they won't work. I tried to actually use one for something a little bit more robust. And they do quickly show their limitations when you try to do anything significant. But, you know, if you were just making an internet appliance or an all-star node or some sort of node, they are just literally perfect, almost like they were made for it.
I mean, they kind of were. They're thin clients. They are essentially just a node on a desk that reports back to a server. So, they're cool, but... Boy, those things are hard to sell right now.
Yeah, well, there's only so many Freds and Sean's. although, you know, let the ham community know you have a quantity for a good price, and I'm sure there'd be other, you know. I think having 5 or 10 of those around for whatever little project you got, it's not a bad idea. You know, the tough part's the power supplies, and we got really lucky there. We got all the power supplies we wanted, brand Skippy new in the bag for those. They had no additional cost. So we got those, we got the Weiss boxes from you, and we got the power supplies from another source, and it just really worked out nicely. Because the power supplies were more money than the Weiss boxes at the, you know, for what we got them from you for.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the tough part with those, that I was getting them with no power supplies. But lucky for me, I don't have any of those right now. They are a tough move. But if I do, I'm sure I can put them out in new spots now and get them sold, because like you said, they are useful, just not to the common PC user.
Yeah, you gotta have a use like we do, you know, just a very specific embedded kind of a situation. I mean, they're fanless, they're induction cooled. I mean, they just are perfect for what we need to do. So, I mean, a Pi is great, but these are like Pi on, you know, but tough Pis almost.
Heard something funny in your last transmission. You were 100% copyable, but, you know, it was weird. It was almost like somebody was really noisy, was doubling with you from another repeater. So I'm going to ask, was there somebody else in there with Anthony going out?
Nothing heard. I sounded like somebody keyed up, but I didn't hear anything. It was that way you were hearing, Sean?
Yeah, it was just like one of these news networks went over the gulch, and you know, and it was under you. I could hear you perfectly, but it's like there was some air noise in the background, so I just didn't know quite what it was. Anywho. So looking forward to getting that all done. I'm going to install that on the network near the house, and I haven't decided exactly where I'm going to put it now. Can't decide whether I'm going to put it at Warren 1 or Warren 2. Warren 1 is where the repeater is, so don't know if I'm going to co-locate it with the anchor, or I'm going to put it elsewhere. And then if I'm going to co-locate it with the anchor, you know, I could run that node off the same box, but I don't think I want to do that in case I move them for any reason. Keep a box with the repeater. So, and I've already got one set up. I just got to log into it and tell it, you got a new place to go now, mister.
I actually heard that again. It sounded like somebody's voice got through while you were talking, but gave it a beat. I didn't hear anything. If somebody's trying to break in, you want to go ahead and give it another try?
Radio's hard, Anthony. You got to push the button with your thumb and move your lips, and the air has to turn in the sound. It's just not easy.
Yeah, well, the way it sounded when they were doubling with you, it sounded like they needed to move their feet to get closer to the repeater. So I don't know if maybe they got out of range or realized that they weren't able to get in. And, yeah, so I don't know. Sometimes it is difficult.
And it could just be some noise on one of the repeaters. Who knows? So, anywho. Yeah, I've been thinking about, I don't know how much monkeying with All-Star nodes you've done, but I was thinking about bringing all the repeaters to a private node, you know, that's whitelisted, and then that private node connects to the main hub. That way, and the main reason I do that is because I got this thing of those push notifications. If I lose a connection, it'll push a notification to me. And if I have the repeaters connecting up along with, you know, other people, you know, interlopers, then I'm getting these stupid push notifications all day for people connecting and disconnecting, and I could care less. I just want to know if one of my repeaters drops. So I'm thinking about having a separate private node for the repeaters all to connect to that before they connect to the main hub. And that's what I'm trying to map out now. I'm just trying to think about all the repercussions. Get the numbering done right. I'm gonna split one of my numbers into 10. Go to a 6-digit format and keep them all in that same tree. And, it's a lot of housekeeping as well.
Yeah, I'm sure you had to, you want it different now than when you initially put it together, since you have extra repeaters on your system, where at one point you probably built it out to have two or three, and now, what is there, 5 or 6, and then it's connected up to Central Michigan?
Yeah, when 2, 3, 4, real fast, and now we got a fifth. But
Yeah, it's just trying to, and back in the day, you got, at first, when they first started out, there were four-digit all-star numbers. And, of course, they ran out of those very quickly. And kind of like amateur call signs, when they first started out, they were just a number and two letters. They said, that's all we'll ever need. Oh yeah? And they were four digits, and then they went to five digits. They ran like that. When I got into it, it was the five digits. So if you wanted a second node, unless it was a private node, you had to go get another five-digit number, and I accumulated 10 numbers by the time they started allowing you to split. Well, now you don't got to do that. You get a single one, you split it, and that gives you 10 right there. Well, the average person is done. 10's all they need.
Yeah, 10 nodes for the common man is a lot.
Well, honestly, with everything I got going on, I could get away with 10. Yeah, I got three repeaters, and I got two hubs, if you will. That's five. Then I've got three nodes that I run, 6, 7, 8. So, yeah, I could probably get away with 10 numbers. Well, I am, because I got 10 five-digit ones, and two of them sit idle. I'm going to get them all back. That's part of the reason I'm doing this is, they're hoping to get numbers back. So I'm going to split a couple of my real premium numbers. I got 48000 and 48100. So those are the two I'm going to keep. And one I'm going to split for me personally and one I'm going to split for the network. And then I'm going to pretty much give the rest back. So it's another bookkeeping thing, if you will.
Yeah, those bookkeeping things, they end up in a ton of work, though, which I'm sure you know because you're working through the process right now.
The nice thing is you can get up and running pretty quick with these new, and AnVoIP always was very quick and effective. You just pretty much, but it was written for one platform and one platform only, and, so you just downloaded the image and you were up and running in no time. And All-Star was a little bit more convoluted, but now All-Star 3 is really nice. I mean, it's multi-platform, so you can run it on just about anything. So, pretty cool. I'm a convert over to ASL 3. There are things about AnVoIP I still like, a few things, but there's almost nothing. It's the list of things you can't do with ASL 3, or there's nothing you can't do, but the things that, I've only found one or two things that really matter that are either difficult or hard to do with ASL 3. One of them is the Broadcastify feed. That's almost impossible to do with ASL 3 right now. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but it's very difficult, throws a bunch of errors, they don't have it worked out. Hold on a sec. So what I do is I just create a AnVoIP node, which does it perfectly and flawlessly, a little Pi, and that's its whole mission in life, just to supply Broadcastify. So let's see. If you look on the Mecca, you'll see there's a Broadcastify, like 1999 or 1995, I forget which private node it is, and that's all it does. Feeds Broadcastify.
That's interesting. I didn't know that you guys separated them like that.
Well, no, I didn't. In the past, you could run on All-Star 2 and AnVoIP. You could. There's a procedure that you can go through. It's a little work, but you can get it running Easy Stream and some other stuff, and then you get a hold of Broadcastify and you're streaming. And it's built right into the node, to the hub or the main node. But that broke with All-Star 3. And I've tried every way, six ways from Sunday. Now, Fred's got it down. Fred does his own streaming with his own, I think he's using Icecast or something, and he's got it all figured out. But if you want a Broadcastify feed, you know, he's no longer supporting the way he used to do it, and then it throws a whole bunch of just throws errors constantly, you know it's no big deal, it works, but it keeps loading up your error log with these errors, so it'll be nice to get that off of the main hub. You know, I'm sure it's not helping matters, but it's just, yeah, it's broken and nobody cares to fix it, I guess. And the guy from All-Star Link, or not, or from Broadcastify, he could, you know, there's something he could do to fix it, but you know, he's unwilling anymore. So, anyhow, I digress.
Well, I would imagine with the technology changing all the time, there's always something that's creating an error, whether it's this one or something else. As you upgrade one platform, the other platform doesn't play nice with it.
Oh, yeah, and then there's things going the other way. Like, I'm on All-Star 2, and I can't get All-Scan to work, and All-Scan's very convenient for giving a lot of people some control, you know. The problem is all the tools to give people control are you got to give away a little bit too much, you know, and you don't want people necessarily having that kind of access. So AllScan's a great way to give people the ability to connect and disconnect things, and it's very intuitive, and it formats really well on the telephone and the smartphone. So, you know, but you can't run that on All-Star 2. I can't get that working there. And I think you can, but, you know, now you're talking about, for someone like me, you're talking about hours, and my patience wore out 2 hours ago, you know. So on All-Star 3, you just follow the instructions, and it's running. You just install it, and it's basically running in no time flat.
More and more I figure out that you guys do to keep these networks going, more and more I appreciate it, because I certainly don't have the skill set, or necessarily want to learn the skill set to keep these things going. It's wild how much everything, there's you know, a reaction to every action, it seems like.
Connected to CMN Network.
You know, the big thing is you know, with the Mecca, you know, we have to be able to drop M1 and M2, you know, during certain events, you know, like especially weather events, which are unpredictable. You know, we may activate, they may not. You know, I got to disconnect from my con, and, you know, we want to use my extra footprint for the storm chasers here, so... It's, you know, right now, I kind of got to do it, which is a non-starter. That's a non-winner, so that's another big thing moving toward the All-Star 3 is I can now give, you know, any number of people pretty easy access to knock things off and hook things up the way they want. You know, somebody gets a wild hair up their dupa and says, you know what, I think I'd like to run the East Coast Reflector, colostomy bag net on Wednesday nights, you know, and so, you know, and they live in Romeo, and they pull the Romeo repeater off and connect up to the goiter net.
Yeah, that will be nice to have that going, and takes a little bit of the responsibility off your shoulders, even though it's still yours and you want to have it's your baby, but, that other people can have some level of responsibility for that. Hey, I just pulled up in the driveway and out. I will later, or if I can, I'll hop on the radio tomorrow morning. This is KE8RUH. I'll pick up with you.
I don't know what you did right there at the end, but you picked up a little bit of a hum or something. But, figure out who's interested so I can figure out who the hell to give the whole shooting match to when I get tired of it. Let me tell you, every day I wake up might be the day. All right, I'll catch you later. W8FU.
Colostomy, you're killing me over here.
what did Jeff used to say? The, was it the pea bag nut? Except for it wasn't pea. Yeah. I forget.
My stomach was a little bit sore from laughing.
That's right. I mean, it's funny because, you know, we're all doing it, too. It's like I'll catch myself. I'll be talking about my aches and pains. And, I mean, just this morning, you know, Donald was talking about his back and his back therapy, and I was, you know, talking about mine and, you know, and all that. And it's like, you know, it's the geriatric net. So we all did, but I used to laugh about that, you know, 20 years ago. It's like, you know, oh, listen, there's a geritol net. Yeah, yeah. Welcome to the club, man.
Yeah, exactly. I remember them days of being young and healthy and figuring that the dividing line was one that was all I had to talk about. Seemed like my aunts and uncles and grandparents and everybody like that, just pretty much when they got together, it was weather for the first few minutes, and then it was all the aches and pains and things that were wrong with them.
Yeah, I think that's pretty common. So, I mean, we talk about the weather a lot, too. And I just think it's just one of them things. But when I look at these puffy white clouds and it's 70 degrees, according to Ford Motor Company, and nice blue skies between these little clouds, it's worth talking about, let me tell you.
Yes, sir, I feel guilty. I'm not out in the range sighting in my latest barrel there was a scope mounted on there. But I had to go to the hospital and get an MRI this morning, so here we go. Yeah, so anyway, I had to be at the hospital at 5:30 this morning. Jeez.
Holy smoke, yeah, that's an early one. I take it that was... Come on. Come on. Man, no. TRD Pro, turd, and you know, big pickup truck in front of me. He was like threatening to poke out into the traffic, so I gave him a mile, and I said, go, and he wouldn't go. That's the other thing we complain about. We complain about our bumps and our aches and our pains, the weather, and traffic. What else is there?
Oh, yes, sir. I remember when I was working a long time ago in Troy, it was a nightmare. It'd take 45 minutes to go from Maple to 16 Mile to get on the freeway to go home. And anyway, it was all clogged up one morning going on the way into work. And so I got in the left turn lane to go make a left turn at Maple, and some lady in a Corvette was sticking her nose out into the left turn lane to make a left turn there through two lanes of blocked up traffic kind of thing. And, you know, the Corvettes, most of the car blocked up the whole lane before she could even see. And guess what? There wasn't enough room. Man, did that Corvette, that plastic body just cracked and crinkled and all over the place. Hardly did it in my little Pinto.
Oh, Pinto, good thing it was the front end, or maybe you wouldn't be here.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The good old days. I'm glad I don't have to deal with that anymore, but I hear everybody in the morning, you know, just, you know, complaining about the traffic. When I get out in the traffic, I'm the same way. What does Terry call them? Wing nuts. All the wing nuts in the way.
Yeah, knuckleheads, wing nuts, goofballs. Yeah. All right, well, I'll tell you what, Rick, I am turning my corner here, so I got a post mailbox on my road, but, you know, of course, we drive on the wrong side for those, so I got to cross across the street so I can get my mail from the car window. I always do that, but I gotta navigate. All right, here I am. I'm up on my street now. I gotta navigate over to the mailbox to get my mail. Catch you in a bit. After yours, WFU.
Okay, young man, have a good night, and we'll catch you later. KEWOJ.
A single piece of junk mail. It wasn't worth the effort. All right, I'm home. WFU.
You still in the car?
This is KF8GBB monitoring.
KF8GBB, this is Rick on SN, KE8WOJ.
Well, good afternoon, Rick. Is that W-E-8-O-E-K?
No, sir. Kilo Echo 8, Whiskey Oscar Juliet.
Roger that. Well, good to make your acquaintance. I'm just cruising through the lovely town of Durand on this repeater here. Check in and see what's happening out there.
Oh, cool. Who do we got on that end?
The name is Andrew, and that's Kilo Foxtrot 8, Golf Bravo Bravo.
Yes, sir. I think you said Andrew there. Well, nice to meet you, Andrew. You wander through every day about the same time?
I will be for the next couple weeks. I'm a carpenter by trade, so we got a job site in Durand and, Lansing area, so making my way through to Byron, which is where I live. So I'll be passing by here around the same time for the next week or two.
Oh, cool. I'm curious. Rough carpenter, finished carpenter, or both?
Well, sir, I've been doing it for a long time, so I will do either or. Seems to be that a lot more rough carpentry falls into my lap than the finish work. The finish work is a bit more competitive for companies anyways. I've got two crews and we frame houses and do a lot of that. The finish work seems to be mostly occupied by, you know, maybe one or two gentlemen is all that's really required, so not really keep a crew of people busy on that.
Yeah, Roger, I was a hammer jockey a long time ago, back in the 70s, and we did mostly rough work, a little bit of finish, but I really didn't like to finish. You know, rough work, it's finish work wasn't my thing. You know, you're on people's carpets, and a lot of it's in already built homes, and, you know, mud on your boots ain't a good thing, and, you know, everything's a little picky kind of thing, where rough carpenters, we just go out there and bust out a new custom house and get out of there and move on to the next one.
Yes, sir, that's very relatable. It's not so bad in the wintertime to go indoors and have a little bit of trim work to do, but at least the money for us is in building custom houses, and I do enjoy being outdoors and not having to worry about offending anybody with my language or, you know, just having the freedom to be outside and be the only ones on the job is very nice.
Yes, sir, exactly. And I started out, although I had experience, my family built two houses of our own kind of thing, so I had an idea about construction anyway, but I started out as a lumber carrier and ended up as a sawman. I really liked being a sawman because we'd get onto the job site and everybody would be humping around heavy, long joists and building the deck and all that, and I'd be putting together saw horses and starting to cut bridging and headers and all the other kind of stuff, and by the time some of the heavy stuff was done, it was time to get up on the deck and start building outside walls. And I didn't really mind that if I was done with all the headers and stuff. But anyway, it was kind of fun.
Yes, sir. A good cut man is worth his weight in gold, you know. A good cut guy will keep the whole operation running smoothly. Nobody has to stop what they're doing, and they can just go from one operation to the next, and everything's already set up by the cut guy, and that is the best way to do it. Well, if you're ever bored, you know, we can always use another cut guy.
Well, Andrew, I appreciate it, but I am older than dirt, and I fall apart just as easy as dirt and sand, so I would love to be still working, but getting the mail is a big enough job for me.
Roger that. Yeah.
You can cut the cheese.
Yeah, I'm trying to stay moving as long as I can. I've got 28 years into carpentry, and sure, I'm looking down the timeline and know that one day my biggest battle will be getting the mail as well. So, time catches us all.
Yeah, I know what you mean, and I heard somebody chime in with cutting the cheese. I could probably do that real easy, and do I guess. And I didn't really like the winter working. We did a few years working the winter kind of thing, and you know, up there on them plates, top plates, and, you know, two stories up on icy, snowy plates, trying to set trusses and stuff, it just wasn't my thing. And then you walk around the job site, and boards with nails in it sticking up or covered up in the snow, and it just wasn't my thing, I guess.
W8EAP.
W8EAP, go ahead.
Yeah, that was me that threw in the comment about cutting the cheese there. I mean, it with due respect, of course, but yeah, talking about the guys that saw the wood there when I was a kid and they're building this neighborhood. I mean, I became friends with those guys because they'd give me scrap wood to build all of our forts. You know, back in the 70s, that was a big deal, and they're building all these subdivisions to take scrap wood and use it to build your tree forts. So just wanted to throw that in there. W8EAP.
So that's where all of our lumber used to disappear to. I wondered about that. K-E-A-W-O-J.
Well, to be honest, we always didn't get permission every single time.
Yeah, you know, I wish there was a bit more of that in the world. I'd be happy to see some kids come in and ask for scraps, but, you know, everybody's got preoccupied with the digital world now and no time for the analog stuff.
Yeah, that's true, and it doesn't seem like a whole lot of people want to kind of do that kind of work, so I don't know. I enjoyed it, grabbing a print and marking down, you know, writing down how many of what size headers I needed for all the outside walls and all that kind of stuff and getting at it. It was kind of a little bit boring cutting the bridging, but, you know, you can't, everything can't be a piece of cake, you know. The guy that cut it was cutting the cheese. What's your first name?
This is Eric. I'm an old timer, Flying Deer member, I guess. Been out here well over 30 years. So I don't get out here that much, but I know when the drive time is. I know between 4 and 5, and around lunchtime. There's like the morning drive, and there's the lunch time, and then there's the drive time. I'm surprised Dakota. I haven't heard Dakota out here, but yep, I probably listen more than I talk but over here in Selby Township.
Go ahead, Andrew, your turn.
Nice to meet you. I think I heard Eric. Yeah, I usually am just listening in, but I'm over in Byron, so I'm on mobile right now, but I'll catch the station on my base station, and it's nice to always meet some new folks.
Yes, sir, it's a good system, and it's linked up real nice. It goes quite a ways kind of thing. And doggone it, I was going to say something about what Eric just said kind of thing, and it slipped my old cobweb mind already. I'll think of it in a bit.
Yeah, I think I was kind of lucky. I grew up in the analog world, and just about when I graduated high school, it's just when the computers came out and cell phones, and so I kind of remember both, you know. I feel bad for these younger kids, you know, born in the 90s or 2000s when they didn't actually know what the analog world was, but I was there right for the transition. As I was transitioning into manhood, well, I guess you could say that, they were transitioning into digital.
Yeah, I got a nephew. He's, 9 or 10 now kind of thing. I remember when he was getting ready to go to preschool kind of thing, they actually had digital programs, you know, little things they could do. And then I gave him a real nice, fancy Samsung tablet I had kind of thing. And to this day, it was many years ago, to this day, he is glued to that tablet like 24/7. So sometimes I think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, and who can forget going to Radio Shack, man? The good old days, riding your bicycle up to Radio Shack and spending your 3 weeks or 4 weeks worth of allowance and money, you know, you do odd jobs on the neighborhood, get like $40 to buy a walkie-talkie, you know, which is like, you know, $140 by today's money. So, yep, those are the good old days.
You're connected to CMN Network.
You still with us, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm still here. Sorry, I missed around there. I had my phone ring, but yeah, I'm back. I heard you mention about giving a tablet, and it is kind of a bittersweet thing, you know. The world is so full of technology, it's necessary evil to learn how to use it, but at the same time, you don't want to miss out on getting out and touching grass, as the kids say now. You gotta get outside and touch grass.
Yeah, he does all kinds of other things. What is it, jiu-jitsu or whatever, and then he plays baseball and, you know, a couple of different kind of things. But he doesn't run around like we used to with little groups of kids in the neighborhood and riding his bike all over. None of that stuff seems to go on. Eric, you know, I finally remember what I was thinking earlier. You were talking about the drive time stuff, and it seems to me like that's the only time the radio's busy at all. I'll monitor a good portion of the day, and it's just dead quiet on almost all the repeaters except for one or two.
Yeah, we got MI5 and you got P25 group. They're off on P25 rather than another group off on Discord. So, yeah. Unfortunately, it's not like back in the 90s where USICA was happening. Like, you know, 12 hours a day, USICA was busy, if you remember that repeater.
Rick, you said your nephew does jiu-jitsu. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir. He was starting to get picked on by four or five guys on the bus, I guess, and his mother decided she was going to put an end to that.
Well, that is another hobby of mine. I've trained jiu-jitsu for 13 years. Got my black belt 2 years ago, so definitely, if anything, it'll give them confidence. And it's a good way to stay in shape.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of him. He's pretty quiet about it. He don't really bring it up or talk about it or brag about it or, you know, that kind of thing. And he's not cocky because of it, you know. It's nice. I think he understands it's a sort of defensive kind of thing. You know, unless cornered or whatever. But anyway, yeah, I'm kind of proud of him. He does that kind of stuff too. So, but yeah, I mean, it just seems like a whole completely different world than when we grew up. KEWOJ, Eric?
Yep. Yeah, I remember back in the day, pretty much everybody got bullied a little bit. It was like kind of normal with the... It's a little bit worse nowadays because you get bullied over the internet online, which it stays there forever and it's more widespread. You know, you get bullied at school, it's like maybe a handful of people know it. So, yeah, it's a lot worse to get, I guess to get bullied nowadays would be a lot worse. But anywho, about 4:30, I got to get ready to go with physical therapy, and I don't want to be, you know, like what Sean said, talk about medical stuff, but I had back surgery, so I'm going to be going to physical therapy for a while, but nice talking to you guys, and I'll try to get out here a little more often during the drive time. So 7-3s, and have a good day. It looks like it's a nice day out there. W8EAP.
73 to you, Eric. It was nice to make your acquaintance. Hope physical therapy goes well. And, Rick, I'm going to say 73 as well because I'm probably getting to the end of my range here. But I will check in on my drive and maybe cross paths with you gentlemen again tomorrow or another day. This is KF8, GBB.
Okay, guys, nice talking with you. Eric, I do my PT in the morning, early in the morning. Seems to be a common thing. Andrew, nice talking with you. Watch your thumbnails there. Man, I used to have a lot of black and blue thumbnails. But anyway, have a good one. We'll catch you later. KEAWOJ.
NAPDF.
Good afternoon, Dakota. There you are.
It's weird being on this side in the afternoon. How you doing?
Fat, dumb, and ugly, same as every day. How about you?
Oh, I thought you were describing me.
Yeah. No, that was just me. Excuse me. I've been fooling around today with internal ballistics instead of external ballistics. It's kind of interesting.
Like the expansion and all that fun stuff. Speaking of, so I want you to fact check this, but my buddy I hunt with pretty much exclusively called me earlier. He goes, the NRCC just removed the straight wall restriction in Michigan to where now I can hunt with any rifle, any caliber for deer down here. And if that's the case, I know what I got to go buy. But he called me. He goes, oh, yeah. He goes, we can just sit on my deck with 6.5 PRCs and shoot 400 yards and no one cares.
Holy crap, Batman. I haven't heard nothing about that. I got to start looking into that. That's a... it's a whole new ball game if it's true. And I'm curious what it is you're going to have to go out and buy.
I don't know if it's true either, and it sounds too good to be true, but I'm not opposed to it. I do have a lot of hesitation because there's too many idiots in southern Michigan anyway. You know, the Orange Army that I don't think should be running around the woods with high-powered rifles, but I'm really torn. Part of me is like, let's go get a 308. The other part of me is like, let's get a 6mm Creed. My heart's telling me to get a 243, so I don't know. But I just want confirmation that this is actually going to happen this season, because if it is, then I get to build a new toy.
Well, new toys are always good, whether it's true or not. Yeah, I got to look into that myself, because if it is true, I'm going to have to get another 708 barrel for my Encore.
I'm going to do some homework when I get home just to confirm, but what he said was there weren't any caliber restrictions as of right now, because I was joking. I'm like, I'll just use my 223 and shoot him in the head at 400 yards, which is not ethical. I'm not going to do that, but I was like, okay, well, you know, do I build something that I can take everywhere in North America, i.e. a 6.5 PRC, or do I just get a deer gun? So that's my internal debate right now, but I want to read this on my own and say, holy crap, we actually get to hunt with real guns.
Yes, sir. Well, I can make a suggestion here. I've got two of them. You might want to look into the Encore. It takes 5 minutes or less to swap from a 20 gauge to a 308 to a muzzle loader, whatever you want. You can wander around with a case with basically one receiver in stock and three or four different barrels and hunt pretty much anything you want. But they're all single shots, you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's very similar to my CEA I have, just a little bit more refined and way more options. Yeah, I was looking at those. I don't know. There's a lot of internal debate right now. My buddy's like, just order, because I have a Remington 700 22-250. It's a Varmint ADL, and it's in a Magpul chassis. It's a short action. So I have everything I need other than a barrel, so I'm really tempted to just re-barrel that. He's like, just get a proof barrel, be done with it, chamber it, whatever the hell you want, and run with it. I really might do that because it doesn't even have a scope on it. I haven't shot that gun in years. But you know, for what the barrel costs, I could buy a whole new gun.
Yeah, right. I was doing checking some gun reviews with this Eric Cortina. He's a you know, match shooter and PRC and, you know, the whole nine yards, and he's making a lot of money at it. But anyway, he reviewed recently a Tika TX3. They have a target and a game version. Man, the chassis rifles, they are nice. Boy, they shoot lights out kind of thing, but it's $1,800. I thought with a Tika it'd be a little bit cheaper.
That was the first one I looked up, was a T3X Super Varmint 243, and it was $1,700. And I was like, damn it, like, do I really want to do that for deer hunting? But 240, that's the other thing. If I get a 243, I can use it for everything.
Yeah, I know what you mean. That was one of my first centerfire rifles, was a 243. And well, actually, I think I bought that's right, it was a 243, Model 70 Featherweight. Boy, was that a nice little rifle. And this gunsmith talked me into rebarreling it to a 708, and that turned into a nightmare. But anyway, I got a Sako 243 Varmint, you know, heavy barrel Varmint rifle, but I shot the barrel out of it a long time ago. And being it's a Sako, I can't really find any gunsmiths to work on them. So, but I've been thinking about getting another barrel of the 243 for the Encore, because I've got everything else, all the loading stuff, the dies, custom dies, and all this other kind of stuff for it. So I kind of miss shooting this 243.
So I just so happen to be doing some work for this my buddy who owns three companies, and I'm building him some some things that are going to make him quite a bit of money. And he goes, you know, maybe you just don't buy anything yet, and maybe I have something that I will give you and have it sent out and built. So I'm waiting to see what he's got, but he was, he did mention he's got a Remington 700 Sendero, an original, with an original Kevlar stock on it with a midweight, and it's threaded. So I was like, ooh, that's tempting. I like old school Remington.
Oh, man, I haven't seen a Sendero in a long time there. I would love to have the 700 LTR. Man, those were nice. My the range officer at Lapeer Sportsman's Club, he had one and his wife had one. He had a 308, he had a 223, I believe it was. And they are heavy barreled, but they're just the same weight as a regular rifle. So it's, you get some pretty good accuracy without, you know, having to hire a caddy to carry it around for you.
Right, and I think I got to kind of break away from my typical mindset of make it as bull barrel and heavy as I possibly can. I want to kind of, not an ultralight, but, you know, a gun that I would be comfortable taking out west.
Yeah, that, exactly. So what caliber would you be thinking about for an all-around, all-purpose gun?
If I was only going to build one for everything, it would probably be a 6 Creedmoor.
Cool, that's not a bad choice at all. man, I had 270s because it seemed like everybody out west had 270s. That was sort of like the go-to. So I ended up with two of those. I told you before, if I was going to be a hunting rifle, I always end up with two of them. So I got one for a backup, so don't ruin a trip kind of thing. But anyway, the 270s, and then I got the 308, and then I got the 708s. I really like the 708s now. If I was to get, but actually, you know, I do a lot of reading also. The Inuit up there in Alaska, they're hunting with 22 250s, 243s, some of them smaller 223s, and you know, there was an old lady that shot a big old brown bear, like a 1,000-pound brown bear, that was getting a little too close to her. And I think she had a 22 long rifle, if I'm not mistaken.
We keep preaching it. It's all about shot placement. It doesn't matter how small the bullet is if it hits the right spot. Yeah, I don't know. 243 has always appealed to me just because of the ammo selection, but it is a barrel burner, and I shouldn't worry about that because it's not going to get shot enough to worry about that. You know, my 22-250 is a barrel burner. I've had it for 7 years, maybe long, more than that, 8 years, and still fine. So I think I'd be okay in that regard, but I like the 6 Creeds. There's just not as much ammo out yet. 308's tempting, but just unnecessary for, you know, some of the other applications that I would use it for, like a coyote or a groundhog. So that's why I think like the 6mm, anything under 269 can be shot at night. So if I stay under 269, aka I can't get a 270, I can use it for literally everything. So that's kind of my thought process. But at the same time, if I go out west and my buddy's talking about going to shoot elk and stuff, it's like, well, 6.5 PRC sounds kind of nice. But I think if I was going to make it to that point of I'm going to spend money on a hunt or go out west or go out of state again, I would have a dedicated rifle for that hunt, not just my Michigan deer gun, you know what I mean?
Oh, yes, sir, I do, and that's why I used to have 2.7 mags, but I always seem to forget about the trusty old 30-06. Seems to me like that's even a very popular caliber in Alaska, so you can basically hunt just about anything in North America with that, but I always seem to forget about that one or pass it up. It's just, I don't know why.
That's a tried and true. It's been around forever. I don't think there's many modern rifles being made of that anymore.
Well, that could be. I haven't been looking around for any, but I did see, I look at, for the Encore barrels, I look at this Match Grade machine that makes a very high quality of barrels. And even they have a 30-06 barrel, which I was tempted to get.
Back when I was in college, I think I bought, that might have been one of the first, like, center fires I've ever bought. Might have been the first, actually. I bought a Savage Axis 30-06, and, man, that thing sucked to shoot. The gun didn't weigh anything because it was just a cheap $300 plastic stock, lightweight barrel, and I don't even remember what I put on it, some stupid 3x9 because I was a college kid that didn't have any money, and that was, I think, the last time I shot a 30-06.
Yeah, I don't think I ever shot one, actually. A buddy of mine's got one, and we were working on sighting it in kind of thing, and but I haven't shot one myself. And I'm just kind of curious to get your opinion on something, bump something off you there. I've been thinking for a while about, I just don't hear any anywhere. There's a couple of groups, brand mice, they talk groups, and they're outdoor and shooting and guns and all this other kind of stuff. But there's never, ever anybody in them. They seem to have created the talk group, but they're not being used. Anyway, I was thinking about a local net, you know, like a once-a-week local net in the evening kind of thing where guys could get on and talk hunting, shooting, fishing, target stuff, you know what I mean? What do you, camping, whatever. What do you think? It could be a good thing or just pretty much quiet most of the time with two or three people? Yeah, there's a little bit of noise, but I can understand you.
All right, I'm coming out of it right now, so I should clean up a bit. I don't know. We get people that come out of the woodwork occasionally if the topic's right, but I don't know how we do for engagement. That'd be the tricky thing. I'm terrible with nets. I forget about them. I say I'm going to attend them or join them, and then I get distracted, and I forget that I was going to do that. Or I have to check in and out because I got stuff going on. So I like that topic more than most topics or all topics I've been on nets for because it's something that I could just talk forever on, which I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but, you know, it'd be who would we get on that net, right? I mean, there's you and I can talk about it forever. Anthony could talk about it. Sean could talk about it. I don't know how many other... I don't want to call them rednecks, but outdoorsmen we got floating around out here.
Yeah, see, I was thinking exactly the same thing. It'd probably be a great thing, but it don't seem like it would probably be more than about five or six people. But I just wondered, since it was linked into Central Michigan, I thought maybe some of those folks might join in when they heard about it.
You would have your best success on the DMR network for sure because it's just so much coverage and it does go up north where there tends to be some more outdoorsmen than maybe down here, but I don't know. There's really no good way to get a census on that either. Like, I don't know how you would pull the airwaves and see, it's like, hey, would you be interested in this?
Yeah, right. And like I was saying to someone earlier there, it seems like drive time is the only time I hear any activity on the radios, on the repeaters. I mean, we must have 20 repeaters in the area, and I scanned through a bunch of them. They're dead quiet most of the day except for drive time.
Yeah, that's the big thing, right? Like, I'm guilty of that myself. I'm really only on the air morning, afternoon, on the way home, and even sometimes I don't make it. Now that the weather's nice, I'm hardly on at home because I'm outside doing stuff or more preoccupied. So, I don't know. I feel like it comes and goes. Like, the repeaters are bumping for a couple weeks and they start to taper off.
Yeah, right. And, you know, like, I I used to be big into nets and follow a bunch of nets all over the place. It seems like now by 7, 8 o'clock at night, I'm sound asleep. And DMR wouldn't be a good idea. You'd get out all over the place. You'd probably get people from all over the country kind of thing. But then you're limited to just people with DMR kind of thing. But anyway, it was just something I was thinking of.
Currently,
yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea. It's just I don't know how many people you can get to come out of the woodwork and join the net. But I'm the same way, like 7:30, 8, I'm phone's on the charger and everything's turned off, and I'm just usually laying in bed watching TV until I pass out. But you know, then there's also Jesus. That guy is smoking so much in his car, he can't even see out of his. There's so much nicotine on the window. That's crazy. Then you run the risk, though, of talking hunting and guns on the air is like talking politics to some extent.
Yeah, exactly. I wondered about that, too. Like, you know, one of the most explosive things in deer camp is mentioned in your favorite deer caliber and why it seems to be the best one. And boy, oh boy, that could start some fights.
And that's what I'm getting at. I've got a couple buddies. I told you, you know, it's only when we're drinking, too, that we decide to have these conversations. But we argue about this gun over that gun and this caliber over that caliber. It's more the caliber talk than it is the particular firearm. But, you know, I've got plenty of buddies that are school of thought that I need this monstrosity of a round to kill stuff. And then there's a couple of us that are like, you could literally do that with a 17 HMR if it was close enough. So I think you're going to run that risk as well.
Yep, and that reminds me, by the way, we still need to have that 9mm 40 discussion. AWOJ.
NADDF, I know. I kind of, you know, I think you know my stance. I've kind of hinted at it. It's just, I just don't, 40s don't do it for me. I've only ever owned, I think, one pistol. And it was a Smith & Wesson Shield, the first gen, in 40. And I just hated shooting it. It was so snappy. And I've got big hands, so I can usually handle things pretty well and not super. I'm not recoil sensitive at all. And I just, it's hard to hold on to the gun. Granted, the grips on those guns suck. So that was the second pistol I had ever bought. The first one was a 6-Hour SP 2022, which was the opposite. It was a full-size, or it was a full-size frame. 9mm with like the grippiest grip ever, and I think that's kind of what just pushed me into the 9, but just the ammo selection, the capacity, the less recoil, the availability, the cost, the guns, I don't know, I just, 40s have never tickled my fancy, but I also would buy a 45, so it's not necessarily the capacity, the cost, the availability. You know, 45 is the Lord's caliber.
Yep, at close range. And you're absolutely right about almost pretty much everything you said there. The 40, reason I started out with a 40, the Beretta 96, it's, you know, it's the same, basically the same as a 92 FS, but 40 caliber. And a couple guys at the range at the Sportsman's Club were just bad-mouthing the 9mm, you know, kind of thing. And I thought, well, at the time, I started looking around, and a lot of law enforcement and government law enforcement there were doing, we had gone to the 40, you know. So anyway, I bought the 40 first, and I was amazed how snappy it was, too. I don't know if I ever really got used to it, but I'm not a handgun guy kind of thing, you know what I mean? The other one's a 357 revolver. What else do I got there? A 22 long rifle. you know, so I'm not a real handgun guy. So I figured the snappiness was just me not being used to the proper hold and, you know, all the rest of it.
This goes right back to our rifle caliber arguments, right? Like, shoot what you shoot well. Put, you know, shoot what you can put the round where it's supposed to go, and I think handguns are way more susceptible to variables than rifles. I mean, it's a lot easier to eat recoil on a rifle than it is a snappy subcompact 40 cal pistol.
Yeah, and you have always got the, like, 3 points of contact, you know, the recoil pad and the rifle's in your shoulder, and you got your right hand, if you're right-handed, around the, you know, for the trigger, to grab for the trigger, and the left hand's up on the stock, you know, further down the barrel kind of thing, where with the handgun, the tiniest little movement of your wrist, and it's all over the place. With, there's an awful lot of comparisons on YouTube there. You know, 9mm, 40, 45s, just anything and everything. 10mm, they got some 10mm. I was looking into the 10mm, and the guys were saying that everybody gets it because it's a way more powerful round. It's the big brother of 40 kind of thing. But apparently the OEMs, and the ammo manufacturers are moving it down because lawyers get involved in a lot of what goes on with ammo and stuff. And they've been loading it down, so it's just barely more powerful than the 40. So it's just kind of weird. There's a lot of weird stuff going on.
I think the same thing's kind of happening with 44 mags, too. They're loading them down. Like if you're carrying a wheel gun for the Bears, right? Like I would want something that's niche. I wouldn't want Hornady factory ammo. I would want something like, I don't know. There's, like, what is it, Bear Creek, who makes the 350 and 450 stuff. Like, it's all CNC monolithics. I would do something like that to where it's like, this is a purpose-built round for why I'm carrying this pistol. And it's nothing different with the 10mm. 40 is just a cut-down 10mm, and if they're just downloading a 10mm, all you're doing is spending more for 40 and carrying a bigger, heavier gun.
Yeah, and then, you know, now that you get into that, Bears, I'm not sure I'd want a, you know, a 40, a 45, right, you know, 454 Casull, or I shot one time, a guy had at the Pontiac Lake Range there, 460, and a Smith & Wesson. My God, what a round that was. It was, the bullet and the velocities and the energies were equal to a lot of rifle calibers. But yet it wasn't that bad on recoil, and I see a lot of guys, I haven't shot one, but I see a lot of guys with the 500 Smith & Wesson in it. One guy could never keep the gun together. He'd send it in to get it fixed, and he'd bring it back out all tickled, and he'd shoot a cylinder through it kind of thing, and it was cracking, and, you know, it was weird. But if I was had to worry about Bears, I'm not sure anything I have right now would be all right.
Came down to it, and I was in that situation where I had to shoot like a 4 to 6 inch 500 or my full size Glock with 20 something rounds of 9. I'm taking the Glock because I know I can at least put way more rounds where they're supposed to be than hoping I'm going to hit one or two with that 500.
Well, yeah, I understand the logic, and you're actually right. I was thinking the same thing, but you know, them grizzly bears, brown bears, all this kind of stuff. I mean, their skulls are so thick, it seems like a lot of handgun rounds would almost bounce off it if they weren't extremely powerful with a extremely sturdy bullet kind of thing. And it seemed to me like if you're going to shoot at one of those, it's going to be because it's close range and you don't have a choice, you know, fight or flight kind of thing. And one good placed round, like we said, shot placement from something that can do the job is probably going to keep you alive more than 20 rounds of something that'll really kick them off.
It does make you wonder, like, what's the right answer in that situation? Buddy.
Hey. I kind of lost you there. You kind of dropped right out after you got to your buddy, and then you just kind of dropped right out.
NHCAF. How you doing, Rick?
Hey, good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, all things considered. Been a while since we talked. I was listening to you and Dakota going back and forth. And been listening for a while. And I looked up that thing that you guys were wondering about. Turns out yesterday the Michigan DNR had their meeting. And one of the things that they did was they eliminated the limited firearms deer zone in the Lower Peninsula, which allows the use of all legal firearms, including the bottleneck cartridges. Firearms larger than 22 rimfire are now permitted statewide. That is straight from the Michigan DNR. They put it up on their Facebook page, and I found it in a couple other places as well. So the answer is yes. If Dakota wants to go and buy that expensive rifle to hunt down here, he can. Back to you.
Holy crap. In any caliber?
According to what I'm reading off of their Facebook page, yes. It's their own page. It's verified. The post is less than 2 hours old. The meeting was yesterday. They did a lot. They eliminated the antlerless deer hunting access drawing. No more lottery. They reduced muzzleloader season from 10 days to 3. Opened late antlerless deer firearm deer season earlier. I already told you about the limited firearm zone. That's gone. And there's a couple, three other things that they did. So, yeah, they did it. It's basically the limited firearm zone, the shotgun line, whatever you want to call it, it's gone.
Holy cow. Now, I wonder if that's immediately in effect or it's going to take effect next season or how that kind of works. I hear things like the Supreme Court of the, you know, federal government, you know, decides what's lawful and not lawful. So they change laws and say it's not constitutional, but it don't go into effect for a certain amount of time, a year, or you know what I mean, whatever kind of thing. But, man, this is cool.
Hey, yeah.
We lost you there for a while.
I was just letting Ricky know that the question you guys had earlier, because I've been listening to you guys for a while I was doing other stuff, and I went and looked this up. The limited firearms deer zone is no more. The post on Facebook straight from the DNR is less than 2 hours old, and they made that decision yesterday at their meeting.
Well, that gets me all hot and bothered. Hopefully I'm coming in okay. I think I'm in HD range of my repeater. I'm going to downtown Elma right now, and it's hopefully going to get better. My radio died. I guess I haven't charged it in 4 days, so that is fantastic news. Obviously, I've got some safety concerns with that, but hopefully people are responsible and don't use it.
Now I'm curious. I'll be waiting to see how long it is before you got a new rifle.
Yeah, I don't need anything new like that for that kind of thing. But to answer your other question, Ricky, you're wondering when it takes effect? 2026 and 2027 hunting seasons. So basically this year.
Well, Rick, to answer your question, too.
Oh, excellent. I'm kind of excited for everybody. I really can't get out and do it anymore. You know, I'm still buying. I still want to buy stuff for hunting, and I just can't do it. I got to keep that in mind. I think that's what's kept me from blowing all my money on barrels and guns and stuff. Dakota, go ahead.
Sorry, I stepped on you there a little bit. ACs are so useless when you're not standing next to a node. To answer your question, I will have one soon. I'm going to say within the next couple months now, it'll be ready for this season. Let's put it that way.
Well, if you're going to do it, now is the time. It'll give you plenty of time to get all cleaned up and set up and sight it in and all that. Over to you, Rick.
Yeah, and it'll give you time to, over the summer, to try factory loads and find out which is most accurate in your rifle there. And that's that's why I ended up burning out that 243. It seems like a couple other barrels is all the load tested. I just love load testing sort of thing. So by the time I get done the testing and find a good load for it kind of thing, there's not a whole lot of barrel life left. Dakota, go ahead.
Probably missed my turn there, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Scan was on and it decided to switch to MI5, but I missed whatever you guys said. But yeah, definitely plan on getting something kitted out for this season. I just got to figure out what and how ridiculous I want to make it.
Well, you got my curiosity, Pete. I just might end up going by in that other 708 barrel for the Encore.
Yeah, he's got my curiosity peaked, too. I'm curious to find out what it is that he's going to settle on and all the stuff that you got to do to it there, Dakota. But anyways, I'm going to step on out because I got some things that I got to go take care of now. It was good chatting with you guys. You guys have a good afternoon and evening. Hopefully life treats you well, 73s and all the good numbers to you. This is Cliff, November 8, Charlie Alpha Foxtrot. Clear and listening out.
All right, 7-3, thanks for the affirmation there. That just made my day.
Yeah, thanks, Cliff. It's always good to hear from you, but especially today with all that news there. Got me all excited, too. K8WOJ, Dakota.
Well, like I said, I got to see what my buddy's got to offer and what he's going to say because I'm doing a lot of work for him. I told him, like, really not interested in your money. I'd rather you just buy me some toys or give me some toys because he's got plenty. So we'll see what he comes up with, and I'll have to start going down the rabbit holes again. I kind of, it's a part of the hobby or the gun world that I never paid a whole lot of attention. I always stuck with, like, 6mm and smaller was where all my research, really 22 cal bullets is where I know the most. And Now that I can play with some bigger toys, I'm going to have to educate myself a bit better. But 243 is the front runner, followed by 6 Creed. So there's that.
Well, I've also been looking into the 6 Arc, and they make them for the AR platform.
So I'm almost home, but that's the first phone call I get to make is to my dad, who I built a 6 Arc. It's an Odinworks upper. I think it's just on an Aero lower, pre-COVID Aero, 18-inch, all decked out. He's got a thermal on top of it. So when I tell him that he's going to be able to shoot deer with that, he's going to freak out.
Holy crap, I'm jealous.
Yeah, I put that together for him, I don't know, 4 years ago. He's killed a lot of coyotes with it. That's his dog gun, but now he's going to be able to use it for the other stuff, which, he might not even. He loves his 350, so he might honestly just keep hunting with that 350, but I'm sure at some point he's going to shoot some stuff with it.
I'm loving my 350s also, Ed, but it just tickles me to death that we can use just about anything I got in the safe there. Oh man, it's got me thinking too.
So the guy that called me earlier, I told you I hunt with him pretty much exclusively. You know, he's got the farm that we hunt at, and I told him, like, man, my 296 yard shot record was very short-lived. It only made it one season before we're going to beat it by at least 100 yards now because he's got such a long shot. If we can use big boy guns, I mean, we could probably realistically stretch it out to 600.
Well, I would highly recommend that you get the end thread, you know, get a barrel that's threaded on the end, and then get yourself a tuner, like the EC, Echo Charlie tuner brake kind of thing. And then you can, the tuner allows you to, even if it doesn't like a particular factory ammo, you can adjust the tuner until you get nice little bug holes there. It's kind of worth the money and time, I think.
I've seen those, but at that farm, it is a very strict rule of suppressed rifles only. So we will be only shooting with cans on. So that'll be the next hurdle I'll have to come over or come across and figure out. But so far, so good. I haven't had any issues with point of impact and all that and groupings with suppressors. So anyway, I'm pulling in here, so I'm going to jump out of the truck and make a couple phone calls. But I will keep you updated in my research and discovery here. I'll listen out. Have a good night, Rick. NACBS.
Okay, young man, you have a good one there, and always good to catch up with you. Yeah, you got my curiosity piqued, so I'll be interested to know what you come up with. Have a good one. We'll catch you later. KE8WOJ, I'll be clear.
Connected to CMN Network. You're connected to CMN Network. Connected to CMN Network.
If any well. KCAKJO.
Mr. Cujo, how are you doing today?
Oh, heading back from Petoskey, going over to Zilwaukee Bridge. Trying to get back into the area so I can get onto the net tonight at 7 through Dakota's repeater.
My neck of the woods. I'm in Birch Run here.
Oh, I'll be breezing right by you probably in the next 20 minutes.
Which repeater are you on right now? I'm off the Burt repeater.
Am I on top of the bridge?
Well, from there you can pretty much get anything.
Oh, I'm sure I could if I was stationary on top of the bridge. I mean, yeah, my gosh. The distance that I can see is perfect.
I've hit John's Warren repeater from the top of that bridge before.
Now that is awesome. I'd love to try. You're talking about the one in Romeo or the one in Richmond? Or are you talking about the Mount Clemens repeater? Oh, I never.
You can hit that from the top of that bridge. Comes in clear as a bell, but only if you're a minute or so as you're traveling across it.
I had a brain fart. You did say the Warren repeater. Well, that's pretty awesome.
Well, super nice weather here today. Just enjoying the day in the woods here. Came back in the woods enjoying a cigar and listening to the animals. Good day.
Just been here on cruise control, 64 degrees outside, so I had to turn on the AC in the truck. You know, so I started to get a little bit sweaty. And been here on cruise control at 76. That's as fast as I can go. Just heading back to my own TT. Nothing more. Just relax.
Well, tomorrow I'm going to have to go to my favorite friends in Shelby Township, a company called Inline Tube. They make stainless steel brake lines and fuel lines and pre-bent lines, stuff like that. I took a bunch of lines off my one of my old cars, and I'm going to take them in. They're going to scan them and remake them all in stainless because the lines I had were pretty rusty, but... I'm going to be in Shelby Township tomorrow. Not sure what repeater I should operate off of when I'm around there.
Shelby, you can bounce off of Warren or Ump in Mount Clemens and maybe hit Richmond. Yeah, but you got your trees right there.
You're connected to CMN Network.
Yeah, it's like an hour and 20 minutes away from here, but I need to go there to bring these lines because I need to look at them and decide if they want to scan them or not. Hopefully they will. They'll remake them for me. I've been buying stuff from them since 2003. They used to be on Grossbeck, but now they're out in on 23 and... They're basically 23 and Van Dyke or whatever. But good company. They make all stainless steel brake lines, fuel lines, that kind of stuff. Great stuff if you're looking to work on old stuff, old cars. Not even old cars. It's just cars that have been driven, which most of those cars in Michigan have been. They got stuff to 2010, 2014. Because it's all rusted out. Because GM is criminal. The GM Ford used unpainted, unprotected, plain steel lines up until about 2014. Criminal, if you ask me. But anyway, I digress. KFADY WOW.
KFADYO. Yep, I totally agree. I was a victim of rusted steel lines on my 07 Escalade. And brake lines are fine, but fuel lines, they all crapped out, so too much to replace. I'm not done with it. I sold it. I made money. All I care about.
Yeah, I think GM was the worst offender. They did not start using painted lines until about 2014-ish. They were using plain steel, unprotected lines, fuel and brake, up until about 2014 time frame, depending on the model. Ford was the next biggest offender. They started using painted lines around 2005-ish or so. And Chrysler started using them around 2000. Foreign makers always used them. They used copper. Like Volvo used to use copper, but I've never seen that in the aftermarket, but, anyway, I digress. Can't wait a while.
No, I just ended up buying another vehicle. Like I said, I sold the Escalade. I mean, she had 200,000 miles on her. We bought her when I had 130K, you know, so we got a good 90,000 miles out of her roughly, which is fine. So she started falling apart. Replaced the wheel hub, which caused problems with the traction, and all the TPSs were all dead. You know, so I wasn't dumping any more money into her. It was costing too much, so I just got rid of it. Sold it to my neighbor's brother, who owns the auto scrapyard, but since the body was still in good condition, he's going to fix her up and use her as a shop vehicle or something.
Yeah, I hear you on that. 200,000 miles is a pretty good run.
I still think these vehicles should go 250 to 300 without needing major things like brake lines and fuel lines. I mean, that to me just seems ridiculous because it's so cheap for them to just paint them or do them in stainless or something else. Yeah, it's a pet peeve of mine.
And now we have, well, my wife inherited it, but we got a 2009 Hyundai Sonata with 50,000 miles on it. It was her mom's. And I picked up a 2016 GIU Explorer. So that's just a toy, though.
Yeah, Hyundai, South Korea. I don't have any problem with those. I got a 2018 Kia that my daughter drives, and I've maintained that for her. That thing has not had any problems. It's got over 120,000 miles on it now. And good vehicle. And Hyundai Kia is the same company, but yeah, they're good runners.
Yeah, I like the Hyundai. She's got a little bit of pep in her step, you know, and she's comfortable and she's nice to drive. I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, no reason to. Hey, my wife's calling me here, so I'm going to step out, but good talking to you. KF8, AYL.
973. I got to get on the mat. David AYL, 73 from KCAKGO.
Currently connected to CMN Network.
This is... Hotel November, Devon, Dearborn Heights. This is Whiskey Bravo 8, Bravo Hotel November, Devon, Dearborn Heights. Whiskey Bravo 8, Bravo Hotel November, Devon, Dearborn Heights.
Connected to CMN Network. You're connected to CMN Network. Connected to CMN Network.
Radio check, radio check.